Welcome to Ed Show episode 84. We got a lot of great content this week. We took a week off for the Thanksgiving holidays here in the States. And in the meantime, a lot of new announcements have come out.
Yeah, most stuff.
One of the big events that we've actually done in the last few weeks is one of our online activities known as the Jumpstart. And for this Jumpstart, we've just released it online on the Microsoft Virtual Academy. This is a two-day-long training course hosted by myself and Corey Hines, and we basically go end-to-end through virtualization, building from the ground up with Core Hyper-V on the first day, and then looking at how we manage our virtualized environments using System Center and Virtual Machine Manager throughout the second day. Now, this particular course is actually aligned to the new Microsoft Learning Exam that's coming out, all about server virtualization. So if you want to get ramped up, get more prepared for these upcoming exams, definitely come to the Microsoft Virtual Academy and check out this online training course.
Would that be good as well for folks who maybe are new to System Center that want to kind
Absolutely. Of Absolutely. We're really trying to do this from the ground up. So we're not really saying like you need to be an expert and this gives you how to take the exam. We're really kind of covering it. You're brand new to virtualization.
Very practical. Get you going. Yeah.
And we've actually even kind of designed it with VMware administrators in mind. So as we kind of go throughout the course, we're going to make references to, you know, we're talking about a live migration. In VMware world, this would be called a vMotion. So we're really trying to help our VMware administrators kind of onboard, ramp up, and move over to the Microsoft platform as well.
There you go.
Now, second big thing that we recently released through Virtual Machine Manager was a series of blog posts taking a look at network virtualization. Now, network virtualization is one of kind of the hot topics that we have today. It's basically where you can go and create private, isolated networks for end users. Now, at Microsoft, we actually use a lot of network virtualization amongst our own teams because as engineers, you know, we have to build our own VMs, our own Active Directory, our own DHCP servers, and that needs to live entirely isolated, so we're not really impacting the rest of our corporate network. So this really kind of walks you through these best practices. It's part of actually a five-part series as well. So we'll post the link to this blog, but this will give you all of the details to get up and running with network virtualization.
Yep. Software-defined networking is a huge thing, a huge push these days, it seems like. So this is a good foundation for diving into that.
Definitely. Yeah. So what's new in Brazil?
We have tons of Azure announcements. The first up is we have now a data center announcement in Brazil. So we know those folks in Brazil doing lots of technology good stuff down there. And you know, now that you have a data center, folks you know, in Brazil are much more likely to probably use Windows Azure because of all the regulatory compliance and a number of other variables that are there. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And of course, it's still accessible to anyone in Latin America or even the rest of the world, right?
That's right.
It's not like we restrict it just to Brazil.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, I was actually in Brazil about a year ago for one of the training events, and that was one of the number one topics that came up. It's like, we love Azure, we want to move to the cloud, but there's no Azure data center.
Right.
But you know, one thing we would do want to tell customers, like if they don't even have an Azure data center, can they still take advantage
Yeah, and that's one thing I think that will take, you know, is starting to take a little bit of mind shift of change for IT pros and folks that are out there using infrastructure. Is it's like, you know, you're no longer having a data center necessarily right in your backyard or that you know that you're going to go visit and walk into, right? But you're going to have a data center that's close to your region. I mean, that's kind of the way it is across, you know, all the major cloud providers that are out there.
And we're not saying an Azure data center.
Right,
we're saying any hoster type, right?
You know, and so that's one of the benefits, right, of our cloud OS is that, you know, there are certain scenarios where you may have to have it literally in your country, right, if there's not one already there, where we have the service providers for that and being able to switch your VMs between your on-premise service provider and Windows Azure, which is right our public cloud. But for those of you who are curious about what regulations and security compliance things that Windows Azure has, I mean, there is the Windows Azure Trust Center. So I definitely encourage you to go to the Windows Azure Trust Center. We're always evolving all the time. We recently got some new security certifications for Windows Azure. But definitely go to the Azure Trust Center for more info there.
Bottom line, even if Azure is not in your country yet, you can still use the cloud.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But Azure also released a bunch of other announcements as well recently, right?
Yeah.
Some enhancements to the service.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, we, you know, we're on the product team for quite some time now, has been releasing at least monthly, if not more, updates to the Windows Azure services across the board. So So a few of the ones that I want to talk about here in order is, first off, BizTalk services. For those of you customers out there who use, let's say, BizTalk on-premise, BizTalk services would be the platform as a service offering that is hosted in Windows Azure, which is now generally available. This is really great for business-to-business scenarios or customers who are using electronic data in exchange transactions, so that you can, you know, make things a little bit smoother for your business to work that way. You know, you have, of course, with platform as a service, you're going to have great scalability for whatever you throw at it, right? And we also have native integration with PeopleSoft, SAP, SQL, and some other things that you know, make a lot of sense for integration with their businesses.
Nice.
Next up, we have Traffic Manager. And for IT pros out there, this is a really big service for you to understand, especially if you're going to have services across multiple data centers, or you want to, let's say, even make highly available or do load balancing within even a certain data center. Because what Traffic Manager is going to do is it's going to intelligently detect, you know, direct that traffic right to different places around the world, or make that traffic load balanced across different services. It is now generally available, so we have SLAs as well for that service. Next up, we have the Windows Azure Active Directory has now hit general availability for application access. And, you know, we had, if you haven't looked at it, definitely check out the previous Ed Show episode we had on the updates to the Windows Azure AD app enhancements. Really cool now. We have over 500 applications that once you've synchronized your identities or put identities in Windows Azure AD, you can have automatic single sign-on to any one of those 500 applications that we support, right? And these are, of course, not even Microsoft apps, right?
Most of them aren't, right?
Right, yeah, right, that's right. So, you know, you want to have a single sign-on portal for your users to sign into, let's say, O365, Dropbox, you know, whatever these other services. We offer that now through for free through our service, which is a pretty cool deal for a lot of folks out there. So that is now generally available. The last and final one I want to call out here, we'll kind of skip over some of the more dev-centric ones, is this release of Windows Azure Monitoring Service Library. Now, this is getting a little bit more into the code space, but it is really a DevOps play, right? So, you know, for those of you who are familiar with AutoScale, right, we have a really easy way for you to go in the wizard, you know, just say, hey, I want to, when this thing hits a certain CPU percentage, I want to scale up to X number of more instances for your VMs or your cloud service. And that's great, right, for a smaller scale implementation, but if you're doing something on a large scale, right, hundreds, thousands of servers, or even machines across data centers, right, having somebody go into the GUI and manually, you know, scaling something is probably not going to really cut it, right? So we now have the ability for you to do some additional custom work that you would like through this announcement of this pack here for you to do auto scaling and monitoring in a custom way that makes sense for you.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good summary of the Azure things. I want to also point out one more resource, and that is Windows Azure for IT Pros. It's a free Microsoft Press ebook available for download.
Yep.
And as part of that series, they've also recently released Windows 8.1 for IT Pros, as well as Windows Server 2012 for IT Pros. Now, some of the other actual add-on mini books that have just been released are actually built around System Center. So there's four new ebooks that have been released in the past couple of months. The first one takes a look at cloud management using App Controller. And this was actually written by two of our fellow field evangelists, Keith Meyer and Young Chow. And it really goes into depth about what are the best practices, design principles, and how you can really take advantage of using the App Controller self-service portal. The second ebook is about troubleshooting Configuration Manager. And so this was put together by several of Microsoft's customer support engineers, premier field engineers, some of the guys that really kind of go out into those real-world customer environments, figuring out the most common misconfigurations, how to avoid them, and if you do have that, how to go and resolve it. Now, the third ebook is actually, again, from our field, and this really goes into the best practices end-to-end you can go with a Configuration Manager deployment. So think of this kind of like notes from the field, things we learn, ways to make it better. So if you're really into Configuration Manager, both of those ebooks should have good value to you. The final one that we're going to mention here that we've just released is about designing Orchestrator runbooks. Mm-hmm. System Center Orchestrator is a graphical-based automation engine. This gives you a lot of best practices around how to design runbooks, optimize them, call nested runbooks, and even create some of your own activities and modules so you could go and build your own custom actions within Orchestrator.
Yep.
So a lot of great ebooks coming out. And stay tuned, there'll be another really good System Center ebook coming out in about a month.
Okay. That's shameless plug.
Shameless
right there,
plug.
Yeah.
It's not out yet. Stay tuned.
Yeah. The Orchestrator is awesome too. If you haven't heard about Orchestrator, I mean, that's one thing that I often point people back to. You know, I'm sure you and I both get asked questions. Well, can System Center do blah? Right. A lot of the times, the answer is Orchestrator, right?
Yeah.
And then Orchestrator doing that, right? You can embed PowerShell scripts. You can create workflows. You can do all kinds of really cool stuff with Orchestrator and Runbook. So it's a great tool to learn and get familiar with.
You know, the best way I describe it is graphical scripting. Because you really do get to use a graphical user interface to kind of design these different IT pro tasks that are basically scripts that run underneath them and allow you to connect these diverse systems.
Yep.
The way you want to think about Orchestrator is if it has a programmatic interface, we can integrate with it. So as long as you're not clicking around on a GUI, anything like that, if it has APIs, function calls, command, PowerShell, we could go integrate it.
Yeah.
So definitely check out Orchestrator if you haven't already.
Most definitely.
Now with that, our interview is actually going to be looking at a different type of System Center component. We're going to be looking at Operations Manager because we have just recently released the update to now support application performance monitoring for our Java applications, previously only available for .NET. So very excited that we've extended this capability to get this line-by-line, in-depth code monitoring.
Yeah, and that's a huge deal for folks out there doing DevOps work. Our APM store is really awesome, allowing you to get down to code, line level where you can just, assign that request over to your developer.
Make him fix it. It's
always
developer's
that's
fault, right.
Well, that's right. Or at least know exactly, what's going on, because maybe it could be an infrastructure problem, and at least that you know, right? Now you know.
Well, yep. Let's go take a look at that interview, and then we'll see you again. Welcome back to The Edge Show. In this episode, I'm joined by Chris, and we're going to take a look at one of the new capabilities that came with System Center 2012 R2. And this is really looking at application performance monitoring. Now, we've had application performance monitoring in Operations Manager for a while now. It came out with the 2012 RTM release, but we've enhanced it to now support Java monitoring. And so we're really going to be focusing on what are the key capabilities, key differences, looking at how Java can be monitored with that deep insight. But before we get there, why don't you introduce yourself, Chris?
I'm Chris Herman. I'm a PM with DevDiv now, working specifically on application performance monitoring for Java. We have an offering that we've released within System Center that I'll be talking about today that provides this code level insight into Java applications.
Now, what's your background? Why are you the Java guy?
I come from more of an open source background.
Okay.
I started here about a year and a half ago and kind of bringing that more holistic view of open source and that kind of thing. And that's why I kind of own the Java aspect of things at this point.
So. Nice, very nice. And I mean, Microsoft, as our audience may know, has been trying to make a lot more investments in the open source community,
mm-hmm.
Linux integration, Java integration.
Sure.
So it's, nice to see that we're actually making those investments in engineering.
Absolutely.
As well.
Right. This is a commitment and realization that we need to support these other technologies as well as our own.
Right.
So.
Now, let's start off by first talking about DevOps. This is kind of one of the key components for DevOps, but a lot of people mm-hmm. don't really know what DevOps is. Could you kind of define that
sure.
or explain the benefits?
So DevOps is kind of this movement to basically take and tie the developers and the operators of the systems together closer to facilitate communication, strong communication between the teams. And really, in a lot of cases, in smaller companies, the ops teams and the line between the ops teams and the dev teams are being blurred.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing here is really trying to help with that communication between these two groups, right? They each have different things that they're caring about, and what we're trying to do is we're blending that together into a digestible hunk of information for both groups.
Yeah, and I think the key benefit that we're going to get out of this is just streamlining deployment, right? Adding more agility in the data center.
Absolutely.
So, developer has a new build, send it to IT.
Absolutely.
IT deploys it sooner. When there's an issue, report it back sooner.
Absolutely.
So that kind of each iteration gets faster and faster.
And APM is one of the key pieces of that, driving kind of that rapid iteration through quick problem finding, quick problem solving, and then getting that rolled back into another deployment.
Right. Well, that's one of the biggest challenges that, you know, I hear between the IT department and the devs. It's like, there's a problem with the app. Whose fault is that, right? You know, was it deployed on a network that's really busy, and so it's slow because of network traffic? IT's fault. Is it because the application's performing slow? There's a bad line of code there, a bad Java query. Developer's fault. And so I think, you know, with APM and this whole goal of DevOps, we're trying to, I guess, answer that, you know, reduce that ambiguity and really kind of help isolate that root cause.
Yep.
So first, give us an introduction. What exactly is APM, just in general?
APM is Application Performance Monitoring. There are multiple ways of doing it. A lot of our products tend to focus on kind of that code level insight into things. So we do, both on the .NET side as well as the Java side, we do dynamic instrumentation of languages. So basically, the developer can take their application and without changing it, start getting immediate insight into where performance problems are, whether they're at the database layer, whether they're in some remote service. And so basically, for us, that's kind of what encapsulates application performance monitoring.
And so I guess it's important to highlight, we're talking about performance, not availability here.
Right.
You know, a lot of people think about operations manager as, is it working or is it not working? But we're really trying to get beyond that. We know it's working, we know it's running, but it's how well is it working.
Exactly.
Now. So that's kind of the next level of insight we're getting towards. Mm-hmm. Now, kind of help me understand. Now, operations manager, it's been around for a while. They do monitoring of applications in general. How's that different from what we're doing with APM? Is it that depth that we're going to?
Sure. So it's exactly what you said. It's the depth. With APM, we're actually able to go down to the code level and basically, you know, tell you in a particular line of code where your performance bottleneck is. General monitoring doesn't get you that level of detail.
Okay. So what are the benefits that IT pros are going to get out of using APM?
Well, IT pros will be able to easily diagnose, you know, if they're running an application, they'll be able to say with a pretty good level of certainty that a particular problem is either network stack related or it's a code problem. And as you had mentioned, they'll be able to hand it off to the appropriate person down the chain, facilitate that more rapid iteration and better communication between the two parties.
And then benefits to dev, I guess, kind of similar, right? They get better insight, better
how many
understanding.
Times, exactly. How many times has a developer said, well, I can't reproduce that in my test lab, so it's not a problem. Well, what this gets us is actual production data.
Great. Now, how exactly does this work? So, you know, let's say I have this new Java application. Mm-hmm. What do I do to set this up to start monitoring it? What is it looking for?
Sure. So this piggybacks off of our initial offering, the JEE Java Enterprise Edition management packs that had been released, I believe, with System Center 2012. Once we've got that level of monitoring enabled, so that's basically, you know, we get app server health. We can get some statistics out of the JMX store, that's the Java Management Extensions store, which will give us kind of an insight into, you know, what does our Java app server memory look like in a particular instance, things along those lines. We piggyback on that, and we've added the Java APM management packs now, which allow us to essentially do bytecode instrumentation, bytecode level instrumentation, just as we do with the .NET APM functionality. We can take what we would determine to be an interesting set of methods. So the execute method in generic servlet, for example, that's kind of the base entry point for a Java web application.
Okay.
We can say that that's an interesting method for us, and we can put prefix and postfix code around that, and we can start extracting timings out of that without any developer intervention. So we can basically do this once the app server's been discovered and the management packs have been installed, and you've configured your app server to start using our instrumentation code, this stuff starts showing up for you immediately.
So does the developer need to write any special code to make it work with APM?
No. So we have a set of frameworks that we support explicitly, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But there's no specific code that the developer needs to write.
So if they have legacy Java apps and they're a new system center deployment, would they be able to go monitor those legacy apps?
They should be able to. As long as the support matrix, or the application rather, is within the support matrix, we should be able to support it just fine.
Great. So can we actually take a look at this in action?
Absolutely. So if we switch to my screen here, what we're showing is this is basically the base JEE discovery that you would see if you had an app server running. I've got two app servers running here. with multiple sets of applications deployed to each of them. At this point, we're basically seeing that the app server level stuff is all healthy, and the applications are healthy as well. What I'm going to do is go into performance view here.
And generally, what's performance view going to show? Is that a trending of
right?
Historical?
So okay, exactly. So we've got a sample application here, and we've got some sample data here. But what essentially what we can do is we've got these four counters that relate specifically to APM functionality. We have the average request time, which is what we're charting right now, and that's collected and reported back to System Center, and we can get nice trends. We can figure out, is my, since a recent deployment, for example, have my response times gone out the window,
okay.
Something along those lines. We also track exception event rates. And I'll get into what exception events and performance events are in a sec. Performance events rates, and then the monitored requests count. So essentially, our approach kind of revolves around, well, it's very similar to the .NET functionality. It revolves around capturing when exceptions happen, which is what an exception event is, and it also reports essentially when a performance threshold has been violated. So that's the performance events. So we get kind of the same level of detail as the .NET side.
Now, when you mention these thresholds, are these configurable or
yes.
Are they set? Okay, so
right.
If something takes longer than a second to respond,
sure.
Then we would want to see an alert, as
right.
An example. Okay.
Right. So what we can do is we can alert on any of these reported counters here. We can actually also alert on when our monitored requests per second actually goes below a threshold as well. So there's kind of a dual approach here, right? We can see when we go above a certain threshold, so I might need to scale my app out. And we can also see when we go below, potentially indicating that there's some sort of transient network problem or something along those lines. But yes, it's all configurable. We don't necessarily in the Java world have as nice a configuration experience as we get in Windows, just by very nature of the fact that often things are kind of multi-layered XML files and whatnot. But we do have the ability to configure that per application. And we can basically say, if this particular application has violated a request, has violated a X execution time, that we want to generate an alert as well as an event out of it. So,
great.
So from here, we can pivot over to what the events look like. And as you'll notice, this looks very similar to the .NET functionality,
yep.
Because it's all the same. So what we've done here is we've really at our core, we've implemented a new channel. None of this functionality that you're seeing here was implemented as a part of this. We're reusing what the customers already know in the .NET APM functionality and basically putting Java information in there. Now, there are some caveats as to where things are different. For example, machine-level information isn't really the same in the Java world because
okay.
the JVM or the app server itself kind of functions as a machine, right? It allocates a huge hunk of memory right off the bat, and so some things are a little bit different. So some of our reporting around computer level stuff, we simply don't have an analog, and in those cases we simply display NA. But what we've got here is a set of events. These are performance events that came out of our sample application. And we have a Struts2 application here, and if I drill into one of these events, we're going to see that it's nearly identical to what we have in the .NET world.
Now, if I wanted to support both .NET and Java applications, I could use a single operations manager
yep.
Management server, right?
Absolutely.
Don't need to isolate.
Nope.
Great.
Nope. No isolation necessary. So what we're seeing here, I mean, if you're familiar with the .NET side of things, this is identical, except all of a sudden we're seeing Java-related. We've got our JDBC connection in here. We're showing our Struts2 URL and various things along those lines. We can pivot to the resource group view and have our SQL client calls kind of pivoted out of there, just like we do for .NET.
And so is this going to help our developers then repro it, or who would actually really be viewing this?
Developers
this
would...
Is this more the IT pro side of the house?
Yeah, the IT pro would look at this and say, I think we've got a SQL problem, for example. Maybe there's an indexing issue or something along those lines.
Okay.
That said, this is extremely useful for the developer as well, right? because we can see, you know, in this particular request, maybe, you know, maybe the developer is not doing something particularly wise on the database side. So this information really applies to both. There's that initial triage process, and then once you're actually trying to do the troubleshooting, it's also useful information.
I mean, this is great how it really isolates and narrows it down and provides, you know, the repro steps as well, so people can use that same browser, same HTTP yep. request and everything.
So we do the same thing as the .NET side with performance counters around the issue. We capture a window of counters that will hopefully help you, you know, navigate and figure out what exactly the problem is. We have a bunch of Java-specific stuff here that's obviously not present in the .NET side that we can also display to hopefully help kind of isolate where the issue is. Let's see. There was another thing that I wanted to show here. So we have, getting to the support matrix, so we explicitly call out that we support Struts 2, Struts 1, and Access 2 web services. So what we're seeing here is actually a call to an Access 2 web service. We get both sides of it, which is interesting. So we've got the Access 2 service itself is being monitored by APM, and then the client that made the call is actually also being monitored. So we can see in this particular instance, we spent 1.1 seconds executing our Access 2 call. Once again, really helping to drive the customer to where in the code the problem is. What I'd like to do now is actually show an exception event.
And so what exactly is an exception event?
So if we have an unhandled exception, so an exception is obviously an exceptional state in code. If you've entered into some sort of, state, unexpected state where the code doesn't know exactly where to go or something, and internally you're throwing an exception, we can capture those exceptions and tell you down to the line number, you know, what the stack trace looked like at the time. So in this particular instance, we get the exception message, so invalid character and key, in this particular example, and we get the entire exception stack trace. So we're getting down to the line number in code that's compiled with the debug flags. We can tell you what exactly the stack trace looked like, taking you down to your own code finally. Where is my own code here? It looks like our code in this particular case wasn't actually compiled with debug enabled. But we take it down to the class. Even without debug compilation, we can take it down to the class and tell you, this is the class, this is the method that had the issue. And when you've compiled with debug, we can actually get you the line number as well.
Wow, that's going to be really helpful in just narrowing that down for our developers. But how can, most developers don't have access to Operations Manager. How can we go and pass this information over to them so they can, start to consume it?
Well, we can use the standard workflows around SCUM for handling that type of interaction between the two parties. We haven't done anything different, essentially. Okay. So whatever is there should work.
So so similar with .NET applications, you can assign them to engineering, connect it to Team Foundation server, pass that information over?
You should be able to. That isn't one of our primary tested scenarios because we've really focused on enabling the channel.
Okay.
But there's nothing fundamentally different.
Okay, great.
That's basically the quick run through of the demo that I'd like to give.
That's great. I mean, that's really helpfully kind of really given us the overview there. But where could people go to learn more? Like, what's a good place to get additional training, additional information
sure.
about this?
So there should be TechNet articles available at present. We do intend to follow general availability by a couple weeks with our final release.
Okay.
But as of right now, I believe the TechNet documentation is up.
Great, and we'll also include a link to that in this post as well.
And we do have a developer blog, which we'll also include in the post as well. That's another great place to get resources that tends to be driven by actual customer interaction. So we've got a customer who's had a problem. The developer will go in and document, in good detail what exactly is going on or how to work around it or if there is indeed a problem at all. So.
Very nice. Well, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate the information, and hopefully this will help our customers as they have these heterogeneous environments just help consolidate that management, continuing to use System Center. Thanks again for your
sure.
time.
Absolutely.
Welcome back. Well, hope you found that interesting and learning about some of the new capabilities SystemCenter is adding as we continue to manage these diverse enterprise environments. Remember, we're not just managing Microsoft Stack anymore. We are really trying to manage this heterogeneous environment from VMware, third-party management systems, different application frameworks. We're trying to use SystemCenter as that single management unit.
Yeah, and you know, if you are really, your organization is really interested in doing some really cool stuff with the DevOps and the APM, hey, feel free. Hey, shoot me even a mail, right? Shoot me an email. I'd love to hear about it, see what we can do to learn more about your scenario, see if there's something we can do to help you out. You know, as far as the edge shows go, right, definitely contact us on our Twitter, at TNEdge, or hit us up on Facebook, right? All kinds of options for you there.
All the contact details at the bottom of this page.
Yep.
Thanks so much. We'll see you again next week.